Session number 11902.
Mr. W.S. Smith, Real 2.
After approximately, I should say, 3 weeks of training on the how, that completed the training. And then different groups got detailed off for, you know, different attacks, different ships, different spheres of, Norway and Malta, and eventually the Far East.
Did you have any preference for any particular area of operations?
You didn't get any choice. I mean, you went where you were sent.
No, but you might have had a preference.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that came in for it. I think, you know, people were only too pleased that, you know, they were on the way at last to, you know, do something of what they'd learnt. Don't think it made much difference to them whether it was going to be Norway, Malta, except the water would be warmer. And it wasn't until getting towards the end that we eventually went to the Far East.
Where did you go to?
Well, I went to Malta first. And I had a number one called Lieutenant Evans.
Do you know when you went to Malta?
March 1943. And we did a lot of training attacking our own ships in Grand Harbour, Malta, all ready for any offensive operations. But myself and Lieutenant Evans, who was my number one, we did 2 beach reconnaissance operations on the south coast of Sicily.
Can you describe those operations in detail?
Yes, you didn't take the warhead with you. Talking about the warhead, I'd better just clarify what it was to begin with. It was a well-designed piece of equipment which had 3 compartments. One at each end were air tanks, and the one in the centre was the 1,100 pounds worth of explosive. But it was so built that once you took it away from the machine and disconnected it from the machine, it just had what you call positive buoyancy, which meant to say it wanted to float to the surface. And so by doing that, all we needed to do to fix it on the bottom of the ship was use a square magnet with a, you know, piece of cod line secured to the warhead rail, because, as I say, it was so well designed. Anyhow, in the instance of the beach reconnaissance operations, we didn't require the warhead. The idea was to see if there was any obstacles prior to the invasion of Sicily to stop tank landing craft or our troops getting ashore. It's an interesting little job. We used to leave the submarine. In my case, we operated from HMS Submarine Unseen on both occasions. And when you got nearly inshore, dive to 15 feet and carry on until you grounded. Then Lieutenant Evans used to get off the machine, and I had a kind of a fishing reel, wire fishing reel on the machine, which I used to secure to his back, and away he used to go, right inshore, and to see if there was any barbed wire or any obstacles that were going to mess up the landing craft. He also had a slate board and a depth gauge. When he got right inshore, he used to give me a pull on the wire, and then I used to start winding him in. Then about every 3 or 4 yards, there was a lead blob on the wire. And once I felt that go through my finger and thumb, then I'd stop and give him a tug, and then he'd write his reports or his details on this slate board. And this had gone until he eventually got back to the machine. Then got on the machine and returned to the submarine.
What did you find in the way of obstacles?
In the place where we did, we didn't find anything. But also, the other reason for the depth gauge was to make certain there was no drops or steep banks, you know, as regards the depth.
Were there any?
No, it was all quite plain sailing.
Did you have to tell what the material that the beach was made of?
Oh, yes, yes, nature of the bottom. Mm. Anything like that.
So everything just went straightforwardly?
It did. Luckily, I had a machine that worked properly as well.
And the beaches seemed to be perfect for landing?
Yes, it did.
And you didn't run into any problems or obstacles?
No. None at all.
And you weren't detected?
No, not detected. Don't forget, this is all done during the middle of the night, and a chariot would take a hell of a lot of seeing.
How long would you and Evans have been at the beach of the beaches?
It used to take about an hour, or maybe more, an hour and a half. Very likely about half an hour running, an hour on the job, and half an hour run out.
Were you calm or apprehensive?
Well, I'd say a bit apprehensive, yeah. Always a bit worried about the machine, you know, packing in or getting a rope around the screw or anything that could put your machine out of action. Because if that happened, then you would have been in dead trouble.
So it's more accidents than the enemy?
It's unfortunately where a lot of the poor chaps didn't get back to the submarines was due to the machine in some cases.
What kind of a chap was Evans?
He was very calm, very cool chap. Good bloke. In civilian life he used to be in a leper colony.
In Africa?
Looking after people. Hmm.
What was he, a missionary or something?
A missionary, yes, he was. But after the two operations, he had to pack in because he suffered terribly with sinus. Nearly every time he came up from diving, his forehead was swollen and he sometimes had nose bleeding. So he had to give it up in the end.
Did you suffer from anything personally?
No, no. If you had a cold, of course, you couldn't dive because you couldn't clear your ears. Now and again, we all got colds, which put you off diving for a couple of days.
Did you do any other operations in the Mediterranean?
No, just those two. The rest of the time we were used for doing any handy diving work around the fleet. Like, a lot of the landing craft used to get wires wrapped around the screws, and we used to go and clear them.
Do you remember any of the specific warships that you helped in that way?
No, I can't remember them. I had a job to do on the bottom of a destroyer once, which they thought had been attacked by one of the Italians. I had to search the bottom to see there wasn't a warhead there. Luckily, there wasn't.
And then you went from the Mediterranean to the Far East, did you?
No, came back home. More training.
Was it different training or just the same
thing?
Well,
same thing. But we were sent to submarines when we came back home due to the fact of the water being so cold, and started training, you know, about Easter time. But then that was on the new machines.
This is Easter 44.
Mm.
What were the new machines?
New machines called Type 2s. Now they were very good indeed. Instead of having two tanks, one forward, one aft, they had one tank aft and the battery, electrical battery, was on a ratchet that you could use to help to get the diving trim. So to get a diving trim on a Mark 2, you pump water in aft and then you moved your battery forward by the means of this ratchet wheel. So it did away with a diving tank. And then we still had the small emergency diving tank. The emergency diving tank wasn't used very much. It was, if you were on the surface and suddenly something came, you could use your emergency diving tank to get down below a bit quicker.
So you were much happier with the Type 2?
Type 2 was a wonderful machine. Once you got your diving trim, you could sit on it, and with your hands, like a pair of flippers, you could make it rise or sink. Very good indeed.
Had you teamed up with somebody else by then?
Yes, Brown. Oh, Stuart Brown, who eventually became an AB. He was my number two.
He became an AB?
Yes, he changed branches. But he was a steward when he came into special service. They were all odd mixtures. Painters, stewards, cooks.
How did you team up with him? Did you have a choice? Or were you just allocated?
Well, our officer in charge, who was the same chap who was in charge of us in Malta, was a Lieutenant Commander MacArthur. He was RNVR, came from South Africa, and he more or less did the pairing.
Did you have any say in it?
Well, not really. I mean, it didn't matter who you got paired up with. They were more or less all quite good at the job.
So when was it that you did go to the Far East?
Well, we went to the Far East in June 1944, a ship called HMS Wolf, and we were based at Trincomalee in Ceylon.
Was this an uneventful voyage out to the Far East on the Wolf?
Yes, yeah, no problem.
And what was it like in Trincomalee?
Well, for diving, it was beautiful, nice and warm, nice clear water, and then, of course, we had plenty of opportunity for training. They had nets there, entrance of the harbour, big ships. The Wolf was a big ship. Adamant submarine depot ship was a big ship. Quite a few good targets to attack. And so we carried on training then.
But clear water would have meant that you would have been seen more easily.
Well, not at dark.
The
only thing that was a bit worrying that when you was on the surface at dark was you seemed to kick up a lot of, you call it,
phosphorescence.
Yes, phosphorescence. Anyhow, we carried on training then, and a couple of targets became available at a place called Puckett's Harbour, and I was selected to go with A.B. Brown as my number two, and Sub-Lieutenant Eldridge, whose number two was Petty Officer Wolcott. I went on a submarine called HM Submarine Trenchant, commanded by Lieutenant Commander Heslett.
What were you supposed to do in Puckett's Harbour?
Blow the ships up.
And what did the Japanese have there?
Well, there were two merchant ships, about 5,000 ton. Mine was called SS Volpe. It was 5,290 tons. These were two merchant ships that had belonged to the Italians, which I think the Japanese had captured, and they were actually being salvaged at the time, and so we had to go in and destroy them.
Can you describe what happened in detail, as far as you remember?
Well, it was quite a peaceful attack. There was no nets whatsoever. the captain of the submarine had given us a very good course to steer, which was one course in and the reciprocal course back out, and he took us within about 6 miles of the ships. And of course, as I say, in the middle of the night, when he was in position, he just trimmed his submarine down and we floated off our chocks and away we went. I didn't have any problems. I think the other one had to turn back some breathing fault, but I think they got away in the end. And old Brown and I, we went on the surface. We didn't see much around. And then when we got within a mile, we started to dive. And then just keep coming up for a look. Could see the ship. And then eventually we got to it. Old Brown hopped off, disconnected the warhead, and took it and stuck it in the engine room, which was just below the surface.
In the middle of the ship?
Yeah. Well, it was being salvaged, you know, salvaged at the time. Set the fuse, he came back. Gave me the thumbs up sign. And then I had a bit of trouble because the breathing pipe to the mouth, there'd been a pinhole in it and water had seeped through it. And it had set this protosorb that the oxygen used to come through, like crystals. Soda crystals, the stuff looked like. And it set off a chemical reaction and was burning my mouth. So I had to surface straight away and switch on to fresh air. And then beat it. And luckily, we weren't seen.
Were the Japanese about on the ship?
No Japanese about on the ship, no, but there were boats on that close inshore where they were operating from. There was 2,000 of their troops ashore in Phuket.
So you had to go back with your head above the surface?
All the time.
Leaving the trail behind you?
Mm. But as I say, luck was with us.
Did you hear the ship go up?
Well, the next morning, the captain of the submarine, he was laid a few miles away, and he was the captain of the submarine told you what time to set the clock for, and he told us to set it for 6 o'clock. So he was wanting to watch it through his periscope.
6 o'clock in the morning?
And sure enough, away they went, and he showed us the explosions through the periscope.
What happened to the Volpi?
The Volpi was blown, oh yes. They were both rendered, you know, useless. They wouldn't be able to repair them again.
Was there any special reason why these particular merchant ships were important?
Well, inasmuch that Japan were getting shorter ships, so it was getting towards the end of the war.
Which month was this?
The attack was on the night of the 28th of October.
1944.
In 1944.
What had you been warned in regard to the treatment that the Japanese were likely to mete out to you if they caught you?
Well, they used to behead them. In fact, they did the canoeists who did the raids on Singapore, they beheaded the men. I think they'd have done the same to the charities if they'd caught us. But luckily they didn't.
Any other problems you had on that operation?
No, not really. It was rather amazing because both these ships were some distance apart and both the chariots got back to the submarine within 2 minutes of each other. It was amazing to think that they could have gone on the jobs and finished back to the submarine exactly the same time. Without, you know, wouldn't see each other at all. So all in all, it was a quiet night and very successful. mainly due to the captain of the submarine giving us a good position, and also the chap that kept the machines in good working order.
Did you do any other operations in the Far East?
No, just those, just that one. Shortly after that, the war was over, and that was the end of chariot training operations.
What did you get your MBE and DSM for?
The DSM was for the operation in Puckett Harbour. Well, the MBE was a long time after that. That was in the Queen's Jubilee, 77.
So nothing to do with the war?
No, nothing to do with the war.